Welcome to The Sports Bubble, a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. My name is Jensen Karp, and I'm a sports fan. And listen, I admit when I'm wrong. And I was wrong about the NBA bubble, because it has been fantastic. It's still early to call it a total success, but between the emergence of TJ Warren, that out-of-this-world pass from Luka, Patrick Beverley doing Patrick Beverley things to Dame, and the Lakers kind of looking beatable, I mean, the storylines are alive and well. I even got a little jealous of those virtual fans last weekend. I'm starting to think these playoffs will be enjoyable. Definitely different, considering we're seeing some real Lionel Hutz level of defense, but I can't say it won't be fun. And safe, it seems. Congrats to our Lord and Savior, Adam Silver. And while he's doing his job, I'm doing mine, interviewing athletes and sports industry professionals to find out how they're doing during this very weird time. Because someone has to. This is The Sports Bubble with Jensen Karp. Competitive swimmer Nathan Adrian is a three-time Olympian and five-time gold medalist who faced the biggest challenge of his life in 2019 when he was diagnosed and treated for testicular cancer. He fought his way through recovery, staying out of the water for almost a year, the longest he'd went since he was 4 years old. And he figured that was the last hurdle he'd have to jump on his way to once again compete in the Olympics, taking place in Tokyo in 2020. And then, well, we all know what happened next. And let's be honest here. At any point during COVID, did you think about pools? Well, I didn't. But it's safe to assume that if Olive Garden can't open its doors, any public training pool is having just as difficult of a time staying open. And so now, with 2021 in his crosshairs, Adrian and the rest of the hopeful U.S. team are trying their hardest to stay ready for the games by jumping town to town to find regulations that allow them to swim and, most importantly, stay safe. On this episode, we talk about those hardships, how the postponement may have actually helped his training, and how his public health degree keeps him up at night these days. And I find out if Katie Ledecky is a warlock and if you can balance a bad pizza on your head while swimming. Join me today with Nathan Adrian in The Sports Bubble.
Call from
Nathan Adrian.
To accept, press 1. Press.
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going well. Thank you. And yourself?
Well as it can. We're talking at the end of a week where certain states are seeing these large spikes in coronavirus cases and deaths. And I guess we've been really like riding the roller coaster on this podcast. So I'm still asking people where you've been through all this and if you've loosened up at all with quarantine.
All right. Yeah, no problem. I'm in Oakland. I'm in the Bay Area. And we were first to shelter in place. And honestly, I'm assuming that we are probably going to be the last to continue to shelter in place, even as the vaccine comes out and with that rollout and all that good stuff. So where we are right now, it's really complicated because Alameda County contains both Oakland and the city of Berkeley. And the city of Berkeley also has its own public health department. So even though we have two massive 50-meter pools and a great training facility at Cal, because that is within the city limits of the city of Berkeley, like Alameda County has given us the okay to swim there, but the city of Berkeley public health department still hasn't. So we're doing the same thing that a lot of other people are doing and struggling to find pool space outside of our normal, you know, training facilities. And I am pretty hardcore lockdown. I mean, it's masks on anytime I'm outside of the house and, you know, still doing the grocery delivery thing, trying to cook at home as much as possible with the exception of, you know, getting takeout maybe once or twice a week.
Sure. Well, you're the first competitive swimmer I've spoken to on the show, so it's going to be an elementary question. But once we saw the nation sort of shut down from the outbreak, does that just close all pools to training?
Basically. I think as just kind of a broad brush statement, absolutely. You know, one of the unique things and challenges that we as competitive swimmers are faced with, especially now more than ever, was starting to define the difference between training and being a professional athlete in the pool versus country club.
Yeah.
And a lot of public health departments, I mean, their bandwidth was, you know, at its absolute capacity. And it was hard to get anyone to hear or create differentiations for us. So we kind of are all operating under this overarching, you know, quote unquote, pool definition.
Right.
And a lot of people think, you know, pool restrictions, oh no, we're not going to be able to go to the 4th of July celebration and do a coin dive at our local country club or community pool. But and that probably goes without saying. But, you know, after the lockdown, I mean, swimming one per lane in a closely monitored, chlorinated outdoor pool has certainly, at least to me, shown that it's been pretty safe.
Well, I'm gonna keep it going with these basic questions because other than being a fan of going into the pool, I don't know a ton about swimming. So you'll have to tell me, is the idea of having a house pool, you know, just the normal pool that we had growing up and swimming in friends' houses and, you know, like is that able to be trained in, or is it just, am I asking if you can, you know, play baseball in a small toy?
That's probably a fair comparison.
Okay.
You know, it is sort of like maybe getting a professional baseball player out there with a wiffle ball and a plastic hollow bat or something. Mm-hmm. It is good to do something. It's good to get that feel for the water. But unless your backyard pool is at least 25 yards with good spillover gutters, I'm getting technical here, which means that you have to have a surge tank, and that just adds a lot of construction costs. It's not quite the same. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but for as individual as a sport as swimming is, there's something to be said about having teammates around you, you know, for your days where you're hurting a little bit and you need some, you know, motivation, either racing them or watching them perform or doing something. Cause it's hard to train alone, no doubt about it. And, you know, to have those teammates there pushing you every day is really important. And that's one of the things that has been a big adjustment.
Yeah, I know you're a football guy, but I don't know if you watched any basketball. They had a horse competition through the NBA before the league restarted, and they would show us, this is pretty early in the quarantine, but they would show us people's homes, and that was, you know, they shot, you know, from their phone or whatever, and they'd play horse remotely. It was so weird. But one of the things that I was shocked with was, like, they were like, okay, let's go to Mike Connolly's house. And Mike Connolly had, like, a full court basketball, you know, like a full gym in his house. And I'm wondering, do any swimmers, or at least now, are they thinking about getting like a real pool if they have that kind of dough, like a Michael Phelps?
I mean, yes, but probably no. Right. Olympic size swimming pool is 50 meters.
Right.
Olympic size swimming pool depth is, you know, about 10 feet. I mean, I could do the math for you, right, if I had a calculator, but I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of gallons. You got to have really massive pumps to get the hit the filtration rate for that. You got to be adding chlorine. It's a lot more complicated than putting in a really nice basketball court in your house.
I'll take that, Mike Connolly. But I do like the idea of just having one lane in your backyard that goes on. You don't have to have the whole pool.
Well, so there's also the ability to do endless pools, which is for the average swimmer.
Okay.
Perfectly adequate to stay in shape or even, you know, lose some corona quarantine pounds.
Sure.
But it really is just not quite the same as actually moving through the, like, you know, so much of swimming is about your feel. And I guess that would be maybe to bring in another sports analogy, like similar to hitting off of mats versus hitting off of grass in golf.
Right. That makes sense. Well, how do you train without a pool? How do you train for swimming? You're on the Olympic team. I know you found out that the Olympics were canceled while you were actually training with your team. So, like, what do you do now?
Well, right now, because Cal is closed, we're actually going to the neighboring county. Mm-hmm. Kind of counterproductive, I know, when we have, you know, two massive, awesome 50-meter pools, and now we're having to pay to rent space at a facility that's not quite as good, but that's the game that we're playing right now, and we're doing our best. Our coach has made great adjustments for us in terms of what we're doing in the water to try to, you know, maximize the gains that we can achieve from not having access to our normal pool. And then on the other side of that, I also, like, right when we went to shelter in place, I went online and ordered some weights so I could have a little home gym set up, because I figured that this was going to last a little longer than most people anticipated.
Yeah.
Which I'm very thankful for now, because it seems that, you know, home gym setups are completely sold out across the nation.
Oh yeah.
So I'm really glad I have that little setup going in the garage to really help bridge that gap.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine anyone is happy about quarantine, but I would clearly get in a fight with people who own a home gym company or like sweats. Those people are having the best time of their lives.
They really are.
Really are. Well, let's talk about some serious things. You did what many people did during this time in history. You adopted a dog.
Yes, I did.
Okay. To be honest, how much does this help? Because I have a dog, and boy, did I turn to him many times during this. But how much does it help when you feel like the world is ending to have man's best friend?
You know, for any listeners out there who do have a dog or maybe have access to a, you know, neighbor's dog or something, I would encourage them to limit their news intake to, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, and then spend the additional time in their day with a dog. I really genuinely believe that would make the world a happier place.
It truly does.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really does. It really just is helpful to kind of lift your spirits. I mean, even walking in the house after a tough practice and having a dog greet you and just kind of, you know, wag her tail and try her best to not jump because, you know, we're trying to train her not to jump on me.
Sure.
But it really is the best feeling getting home and having a happy face greeting you.
Well, you were open about your treatment for testicular cancer in 2019, and you were rigorously training to make the 2020 Olympic team. You still are. But with this delay now, I wonder, does this actually help you with recovery and getting back into shape? Because you were on a bit of a sped-up timeline.
Absolutely, 100%. It took me a little bit to realize and appreciate that fact, just as it would. So I have definitely been able to gain more strength back. And because, as you mentioned, I was on a little bit of an accelerated timeline. I've kind of been able to step back, work through some fundamentals, especially in the weight room, also in the pool, to kind of patch over some spots that we had maybe rushed through in our initial return. So I feel great about where we're at right now and where we're going.
Yeah, I mean, that during the surgery and the treatment you had, that was the longest you went without swimming since you were four. You didn't miss that much time because of coronavirus, really. I mean, the shutdown and then you found pools that worked out for the team.
Yeah, exactly. So that was definitely the longest. Yeah, that was the longest by far. So we were fortunate. We found some pool space to swim at pretty shortly after the shelter place and some restrictions were lifted, just to maintain a little bit of swimming. You know, we weren't going 100%, but we did what we could.
Okay, now this is my question about your teammates. You bring them up. I have a question. How do they understand? I mean, this is a big question, that there are no other public health grads from UC Berkeley on the team.
Oh, that's a good. Is that a question?
I'm being honest, because here's the thing, right? I'm on an Olympic swim team. We're all scared. We're all like, can we practice? And then there's a dude whose education has come into play.
Yeah, you know, I guess I can't. I have an undergrad degree in public health, and that is relatively rare. Berkeley is actually one of the few places that offers that undergrad degree. Most of the time, it's actually a master's or a doctorate level degree. And I'm not trying to elevate my status to that. I'm just saying I don't know as much as your typical public health officials. I would honestly just say that I was in classes that warned us about what is currently happening. And knew that it was possible. And I mean, looking back, even I had a friend who worked downtown San Francisco, and he sent a time lapse video of that cruise ship that had the coronavirus patients coming into Oakland. And I just remember seeing that, and I was just terrified. I was like, this is it. Like, we are introducing this into our population, and I hope that it's going to be managed properly. And as we look back, unfortunately, it wasn't, and there's certainly a lot of lessons to be learned there. But I think I probably had my alarm bells ringing a little bit before most people.
Yeah, I could only imagine. I was an international relations minor for a second, and it wasn't something that I like really truly wanted to get into, but I was so interested in it. And we had one professor back in, 98. And I even like emailed my parents. So I was so like happy that I had like recorded it down. But he goes, in the next 4 or 5 years, we're going to have some crazy terrorist attack from Osama bin Laden. And I didn't really know who Osama bin Laden was or anything. So I'm freaking out there. And then as soon as the, terrible 9/11 happens, even my parents were like, that guy told you. And I feel like you must have had a similar instance with this, where like you immediately knew what kind of damage, what kind of terrible few months we could have in the U.S. because of a pandemic, something that I thought was just like a board game name until 5 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was. you're gonna hit some hot spots with me, man. So I very distinctly remember when it was starting to experience community spread. And even when Dr. Fauci and the American Surgeon General, I unfortunately forgot his name right now, were talking about not wearing masks, and I was very upset about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, how are you going to have places like Hong Kong and Taiwan, who are essentially, they like Hong Kong obviously shares a border with Taiwan. Hong Kong shares a border with China. Taiwan is 100 miles off the coast. There are people going back and forth all the time. And both of those countries managed to contain the virus very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And part of their culture is wearing masks. Even when there's not a global pandemic, you see people wearing masks. So I'm like, that there's something to be said about that. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge key to their success. And here we are so many months later, still debating the efficacy of masks. And that's the reason why I have to turn off the news. Yeah. and play with my dog.
Yep. Well, that's the reason you adopt the dog. I get it. You are heavily involved with the next generation of swimmers, whether it's just through social media or through your team or the school you run with Will Copeland. As far as training for the Olympics in 2020, you're a bit of a veteran now on the team. How do you help them, the younger guys, keep the momentum they had before the shutdown?
That's a very individualized question. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of different ways that people are motivated, and watching like my teammates and trying to just maybe create some reframes in their minds, you know, looking at the next year as an opportunity rather than a burden, mm-hmm. or trying to figure out how to get them, you know, get the most out of them in practice by racing them this or that, or, you know, knowing that they're on a great track and they don't need any of my help. Like, I could only really hurt them. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to really get to know a person or your teammate before you try to, you know, intervene in any way.
Sure. Let's get hot button again real quick. I wanted to talk to you about your mom for a second. She was a school district nurse, correct?
Yep.
That is a role that could not be more front and center when we are talking, locally at least in people's neighborhoods, to everyone in the United States right now. Does she have an opinion about everything going back to school, the fact that we're putting our children in these situations? I mean, she would be the person, she would be the person working pretty much 24 hours a day right now, I assume.
Yeah. She's not. Let me put it this way. My mom has not really been in close contact with any of her grandchildren. Mm-hmm. She will have an outdoor picnic socially distanced. And normally she, you know, sees and hangs out and helps with childcare, I don't know, anywhere from 1 to 3 times a week. And ever since this started, I mean, I remember calling her saying, you need to stop that.
Yeah.
Like immediately. And she was like, no. I was like, no, mom. Listen, like, I mean, we had a pulmonologist from Denver come and talk to us while we were at the training camp. And basically he said, hey, listen, based off of our knowledge, and this is way back in February. So
sure.
Based off of our knowledge at right now, anybody over 65 that gets this disease, it's literally like playing Russian roulette with a revolver and having one bullet in the chamber.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, that put it into perspective for me. So, you know, a 17% chance of dying, like you wouldn't play Russian roulette, right? Like you would do everything in your power to not have to do that. So my mom and my dad are doing essentially that until, you know, a vaccine or the numbers go down. And to your point, I mean, yeah, she's not in support of going back to school. I mean, she also lives in Washington State. They've handled the virus pretty well and are pretty conservative with the handling of public health.
We've been telling people, because my wife and I have a 1-year-old, and we're so lucky that we don't have to make that decision right now, you know, that whether school or not, and we're not in the situation to make that. Because some people, you know, both of us work at sometimes, like it would be impossible to take care of him, you know, all day long for another 5-6 months. And we would have to, I mean, that's where we would, we are not letting him out. But, you know, your mom probably took her job very serious, and it would be a very hard decision for any of these teachers or these nurses that know they have a job that they love and a responsibility that they love to not go or go. What a difficult decision for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're stuck in between a rock and a hard place. You don't go into teaching or school nursing because you're going to get rich,
right?
You go into teaching or school nursing because you love kids. You love what's happening at the school, and you want to help the generation beyond your own. And again, it comes down so much to, you know, what's happening at your community level. Like, I live in my little bubble in Oakland. Mm-hmm. Alameda County has, I think, 1.6 million people. Like, we do have, you know, we have days where we have 400 or 500, 600 cases. So, yeah, no, I don't necessarily think that we should be going back to school. But if you're in, you know, Wyoming, Montana, it's in a rural district and you haven't had cases for 2 weeks, like, of course you need to go back to school. I'm not trying to suggest that, you know, people shouldn't go back to school the entire year or whatever. It really just has to be managed and managed closely, because it's very stressful and dangerous to sit and wait for test results for a week and wonder if you may have gotten it.
Yeah, it's insane. I know there's some billionaire I was reading about yesterday who is looking into creating outdoor schools.
I love that idea. You know, yeah. I mean, let's talk about this. So you have a one-year-old. Mm-hmm. If you were forced to have and imagine he's, let's call it 7, 8 years old, would you send your kid back to school?
No.
Or would you consider, and what some of my friends are, more than one of my friends are doing, is essentially like taking extra jobs. Or, you know, if they were furloughed or unreduced or whatever it may be, basically being an education coordinator for these kids that are learning from home.
Yeah, I'd have to. I mean, like I said, we're just lucky we don't have to make that decision. But I mean, like, if I was in that position, I could not send them to school. I had a child so that I could worry all day, right? I mean, I already feel that nerves. I'm not throwing them out to the wolves. So I would have to come up with something. You're right. I'd become a bit of a professor myself. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not something I have to face, luckily, and I feel bad for those who do. More with 5-time Olympic gold medalist swimmer Nathan Adrian after this. Right now, Feeding America is working tirelessly to ensure our most vulnerable populations, like students who are out of school, the elderly, individuals whose jobs are impacted, and low-income families, continue to have access to food and other needed resources during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Feeding America Food Bank Network is committed to serving communities and people facing hunger in America, and their greatest need is donations and support of local food banks. This podcast is committed to donating a portion of the proceeds from the show to Feeding America, and we hope that you can join us in this effort too. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org/COVID-19. Now, let's get back to Nathan. You obviously have a bit of a decision coming up with Tokyo 2021. There's a bit of an Olympic bubble joke, right? There's like a meme with this village where all you guys stay, and there's been jokes for years about how STDs and sicknesses go around it, and it's sort of a bubble. And it's funny because now we rely on these bubbles for Tokyo 2021. You know, we rely on them to make it work. So you tell me, is it going to be safe? You've been there. Can it be healthy?
I do believe it can be safe, and I do believe it can be healthy. You know what's crazy is in every lead up to every Olympic Games, there's always a story that goes around, right? And, you know, 2016, it was Zika. 2012, it was security. The 2008, I honestly can't remember. I was too young. But there's like a reason why these Games are going to be, you know, catastrophic. And here's Japan finishing all of their infrastructure like months in advance, which is totally unheard of. And then the actual global pandemic, the one thing that isn't up to them at all, occurs and delays the game, which is just so unfortunate. I really, truly feel for, you know, Tokyo 2020 and all those organizers. But that being said, I mean, it is going to be an amazing opportunity for Japan to create and execute on a bubble and a safe and effective Olympic Games. I think they can do it. I mean, I trust them to do that.
Yeah, well, I guess all of sports is having this kind of issue. And like we said, you're a bit of a football fan, but specifically, I think you are a Seahawks super fan.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Known for their incredible fans, the noise that they make in the stadium. Could you imagine, this is the one I think about all the time, a empty, quiet CenturyLink. Like, I can't even fathom without the 12th man. It seems crazy.
It is crazy, but all of this is crazy, man. I have seen the practice facility and seen what those guys like, you know, getting up and getting after it at practice. And there's no noise happening at, where is it, Kirkland or wherever it is. And it is, I don't know. I believe in Coach Carroll's, like, you know, fostering of that competitive nature, of that competitive spirit. Obviously the 12th man makes a huge difference. Yeah. It's absolutely unbelievable to be there and be talking and not even be able to hear your own voice. It's sure. Like, it's something special. but it obviously is not going to happen this year. I just really hope the season, I hope they figure out a way to execute on a successful season.
Same. Well, let's hope it's more basketball than baseball. I want to end with something that was all over the internet this week. Swimmer Katie Ledecky on the internet swimming the length of a pool with a cup of chocolate milk on her head. It doesn't spill at all. It stays on her dome the entire time. Is this as insane as it is to a normie like me? Is she some sort of warlock?
She is a warlock. Okay. Let's be very clear about that.
Thank you.
She is a very special athlete. I would put money on 95% of the national team being able to do that, though.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, maybe 90. There's some people whose head moves all over the place when they swim, but it's hard. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we're talking about national team athletes. We're talking about the absolute best of the very best. So it takes a lot of kinesthetic awareness to be able to keep your head that still while you're pushing, you know, moving through the water.
Had no idea that it could be that common. So I wanted to ask you if there were some other things you think could balance on the head of an Olympic swimmer and if it would work.
Oh, okay. All right. Shoot.
Okay. First is a bucket of chicken. It's more tubular, kind of definitely larger, but you know, like it fits like a hat, so it might be easier.
Oh, you know, if we were doing backstroke, I'd say for sure. Yes.
Okay.
Doing freestyle, it's a little harder. You know, what also matters is the shape of people's heads, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's confounding right there.
All right. How about a sneaker?
Oh, easy. Yeah. That one's easy.
Okay, good. A football. That feels, I can't even really hold it in my hand.
Ooh. yeah, no kidding. I would be impressed with anybody who could swim 50 meters with a football.
All right, you heard that, Katie Ledecky.
Without like pinching it.
Right. Okay. this one I really went back and forth on. A stiff pizza. Like a Chuck E. Cheese, a little tougher of crust.
In the box or just the pizza?
Just the pizza. In the box, I feel like is a cheater, but that is long, but I'm going to go with just the pizza.
That'd be hard. That'd be hard. Okay. You could definitely get away. You would finish the 50 with some slices, but not the whole thing.
Good. Good. All right. My last two, this one, I think, like you said, might play into the shape of the head, a plunger.
Oh yeah, that's all about whether or not you could get a little suction going on your head. I bet I have a good chance of it because this is my claim to fame. Here we go. I had the largest circumference head of the national team members leading up to 2016.
Whoa, you have like a dome piece. Do you know what your hat size is?
I think it's like 7 5/8.
That's big.
I think.
That is a big head.
It's pretty big. I got a pretty big head.
That is very big. Well, I will throw out plunger for you then. All right, six, my last one, and I'm almost suggesting this is your viral video, because if this were to happen, I'm telling you, man, this would be all over the place. What if you swam and kept a Jenga game completely intact on your head?
Now you are talking. Wow. This could be a viral challenge because you could start with, you know, one layer,
yep.
Put on another layer, put on another layer, see how far you could go. I don't know if I could do the whole thing. sounds really hard.
I'm
really
just trying to get you one up on Katie Ledecky. Well, Nathan, please stay safe for me. And I genuinely am thankful that there, I mean, honestly, it sounds dumb, but I'm thankful that there is someone with a public health education working with the Olympic team. Because I some people don't get it, man. Like you said, people still fighting not to wear masks.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I learned about it in class. Learned about the seatbelt debate. There's a directly inverse correlation between personal freedoms and public health intervention. And just to understand that, I think is important. And to understand that these interventions, if done well and effectively throughout the population, are short term. So I'll end with that.
To better times. The Sports Bubble is produced and distributed by Treefort Media. The show is executive produced by Kelly Garner, Lisa Ammerman, Matthew Kugler, and me, Jensen Karp. Tom Monahan is our senior audio engineer and sound supervisor, with production and editing by Jasper Leek. Additional production help from Tim Schauer, June Rosen, and Haley Mandelberg. Our theme music is composed by Spilkus. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please subscribe, rate us, and review us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And please visit feedingamerica.org. If you're able to make a donation, any amount makes a difference, and you can learn more about other ways you can help on their website. For more information on the Sports Bubble, links to the socials, and for show transcripts for our hearing impaired listeners, go to treefort.fm. Be safe and be well. The Sports Bubble is a production of iHeartRadio and Treefort Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.